Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok, August 2012. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Sarah, Tadal, Jonathan and Suchin.
A simple question on khandhas. We know each dharma, each reality is khandha. Each sound, each visible object is khandha. Each feeling is vedana khandha, and so on. If this is a point that people find quite difficult, if each dharma, each reality is a khandha, so actually then it means there are an indefinite number of khandhas, thousands or millions of khandhas. So why do we talk about five khandhas only? Because each reality is
It includes all realities, like Sankhara Khanda includes all jetasikas, 50 jetasika as Sankhara Khanda, and Jitta, Vijnana Khanda, includes all kinds of Jitta,
yes,
and feelings. Depending on Upadana, that's why it is Upadana Khanda, because we cling very much to all these five Khandas. We cling to Rupa for sure. Right now, whatever it appears through what doorways, and we cling to feeling so much that many people say that they'd like to have on and on pleasant feeling, non-stop pleasant feeling, see? Clinging to feeling very, very much. And if there is no sanya, no memory about all these realities, how can they be clinging to anything? And Sankhara Khanda, whatever arises, is object of clinging, as I or mine all the time. And Vijnana Khanda too. So it covers all kinds of realities.
Yes. But my question is, for example, each citta, mm-hmm. each Vijnana is a Khanda. So seeing now is Khanda, hearing now is Khanda, thinking now is Khanda. Each one is a different khanda, each one arises and falls mm-hmm. away, so each citta is Vijnana khanda. So in that case, why do we say there are only five khandas?
Would you like to have more? You can.
We can say there are a thousand It's a bit like when
each one is khanda.
Can we say it's a bit like when we classify feelings? Sometimes mm-hmm. we say there are three feelings, sometimes we say there are 108 feelings, mm-hmm. so actually each feeling is Vedana's feeling, mm-hmm. but it just depends on how we
bodily
count them.
Or mentally. Yes. Yeah. Does it mind what it's called?
Not
at all.
Each citta and each citta rising and falling away, no matter
what you call it.
Or the name. Yeah. And I have some questions on karma and vipaka. One interesting comment I heard you make on a recording which caught my attention was, serves you right. So usually when someone has an unpleasant experience or we hear about some difficulty or some injury, we feel very sorry for people, and most of us are quite upset when someone is hurt or injured, but usually you just smile and say a result of karma. And this comment was when someone got hurt and you said, well, actually we can say serves you right because it's just the result of mm-hmm. karma. Yeah. Would you say a little more about serves you right?
Very, very right.
Very fair. Of course, if someone is hurt or injured and you just say, serves you right.
You didn't have to say it.
That this is the truth, yes. And I had a discussion with a friend about unpleasant bodily feeling, death, as just being the result of karma and upanisiyapachya. And the friend mentioned, well, of course, in the text it often says there's no single fruit or no single cause. And then, for example, in the Melinda Panha on untimely death, it mentions many different factors, cold and weather and all these different things. So why would it mention these different factors when really the only causes of bodily unpleasant feeling, of painful feeling, or experience, or of death, or vipaka cittas, is only karma and natural decisive support condition?
What about sowing the seed on the rock? Can it grow? Is it time for it to grow? Or it depends on other factors too?
Right. So then, when we say that, for example, the cause of death is karma, so we can say it is karma, but it depends on other factors too. As well.
Yeah. As much as we can know, we can say, is that we cannot tell about all factors for its arising.
But I've heard you mention, for example, there was someone mentioned the example of someone dropping a bomb from an aeroplane and people dying. You say the cause or the only cause of the death is karma, not the dropping of the bomb or
some
these other
people
factors.
Didn't get that result at all from the bomb.
So then you've said that the only cause is karma, but what about the other support factors?
Can we tell everything, every factor?
So the other factors, such as the...
It's time for that to ready, ripen.
Can we say that the deeds of the other person are a factor, a support factor, or...?
Where is that person?
Well, it's just an idea. In fact,
so
it's just the experience
where is
of
the
bodily feeling.
Intention to kill. Whose intention is there?
That is the other person's. So it will bring its own result.
In reality, even there is no one there at all, but
no.
There can be condition for death to arise.
Right. But can one say the other's intention, which will bring its own result? And like, for example, when the mosquito is killed, the cause of the death of the chuticita is past karma. But can one say that...
Can one kill by intention only? Or what hurt it? And if there is no kaya pasada at all,
no,
can it be hurt?
No. Yeah. So that is the result of karma. But can one say that the other's intention to hurt is a support factor?
For whom?
So you're saying only for the one who intends to hurt, not for the mosquito, because it's just the bodily experience.
In terms of
moment.
Tattoo, it's so clear when we talk about in terms of tattoo.
Yes.
No one there.
No one. And even when it talks, for example, in the Milinda Panha about other support conditions like weather and temperature, but actually, again, it's just the experiencing of heat or cold at that moment. So it's just the dhatu, the moment of experiencing. So not everyone feels cold or not everyone feels hot. So it just depends on that. So then I don't understand why they are considered as support factors, because actually it's just the moment of experiencing conditioned by karma.
Without that, see, so that is support factors.
What is?
The hardness, which hits, something like that.
I see.
It can be object and it can condition death.
Yes, if there is the experiencing of it.
And is this the knowledge of understanding reality? When we are talking about pariyatti, we talk about the very skillful in studying.
Yes.
But what is meant by studying and skill? It's not just knowing what is written in the book, but it's now at moment of understanding realities.
Well, I think that by coming closer and closer to understanding that there are only dhatus now, there are only moments of experiencing conditioned by karma and other factors, moments of seeing, moments of like or dislike of what is seen, I think it does help to eradicate, to eliminate the idea of self or being.
And idea of killing too.
Of killing. Mm-hmm. Right, because actually when we talk about killing, it's just the experiencing of hardness. So when we read about akusala kamapata and killing and dosa of a strength that conditions death, in fact, there is no killing and
only,
there is no...
Only six dores.
Only six dores. Yeah. So there is no actual killing and there is no death caused by one's own cheetahs of the other. So when it talks about the akusala kamapata of killing, it's really just referring to the chaitana that is of such a strong degree that there is the intention to hurt, mm-hmm. and there are conditions for chuti-chita to arise in another being. But why do we call it killing if actually there's no killing?
Why do we call people?
So it's just a term for different dharmas.
I have one question about this chuti-chitta. Can we say that when one is born, yeah, somebody or for example, the Buddha could know when this person will die?
He knew everything.
Oh.
Yeah, Sammasambuddha.
Oh.
Special one. Very, very special.
So, in other words, yeah, when we were born, yeah, the length of our life is determined, predetermined?
By conditions only.
Mm-hmm. For instance, yeah, we have a person, yeah, who grew up very generous and dedicated his whole life to Dhamma, and can that person prolong his life because of his good deeds in this life?
At will, or it can it be a condition like ittipada? And prolong ill deeds or prolong good deeds in a lifetime?
Yeah, it's just my thinking, yeah? I think there may be many, not opportunities, but many possibilities of losing our life, yeah, during one's life, yeah, our own life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if one is dedicated to doing good things, yeah, then somehow that person may have more chances of devising his death at certain points in his life. Can we say, well, we cannot say that?
When you say that person has more chance of deferring his death,
defying his death.
Oh, you mean intentionally?
Not intentionally, but somehow he would have a better chance of prolonging his life because he has a more positive attitude to his life.
How can he know how long his life will be?
Well, of course he doesn't know, but when he passed away, we can say that he was going to die at that such and such time, but because he was so devoted to doing good things, he defied all this.
Before he can think about that, they can be dead.
Yeah.
But I think maybe Tadao's point is that actually, although the chuti-chitta is conditioned by past karma,
yeah.
If there is a lot of kusala in life, that there may be conditions that also will be a factor that will affect when chuti-chitta will come.
What about after death, you would be born in heaven, better than this life?
Yeah.
See?
Mm. I think his question is more, though, that, for example, let's say someone has an accident and the conditions for death to arise, but actually if there have been a lot of good deeds, they may not die at that time. Karma is very complicated. It's not predetermined when the death...
We can talk about this as long as this is not coming. But when it's there, it's time to think about it.
Yeah. I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that one, but also if we say that when one is born, yeah, the length of his life is predetermined, yeah, it's very much like fatalism, yeah?
Yes.
So then there's no reason to do any good deeds. That's the argument somebody may develop.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's only the sammati marana, only sammati marana. Next moment is rebirth consciousness.
And it's not quite like that, because the Buddha, because of his omniscience, could know when death would come, but that would be, if good deeds were done in the life, that would affect it. So it's not regardless of whether good or bad deeds, but he knew those good deeds that were going to be done in that life too.
But is it not true that the result of good deeds that one performs in this life, yeah, may bring their fruits, yeah, not only in the future lives, but also during this life?
Like now, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's the result of good deeds in this life or previous lives.
They don't necessarily have to bring the result in this life, but it could be a condition for different karma to operate in terms of the death. But I think the jukhi citta is the same vipaka as the pratisandhi citta in the same lifetime.
Conditioned by the same karma.
Just like Bhavanga, but it's the last one.
Right.
So when you mentioned before about the pariyatti and this moment, I think your point was that when we think about death at the end of life or last life or at another time and forget about death at this moment, then we cannot say it's pariyatti, because it's not about present dharma.
Because when we are talking about pariyatti, we means the understanding of whatever is taught that reality is, and the condition so forth, in order to just condition the understanding of reality right now. Otherwise it's not the skill of pariyatti. Because usually we think in our own views about this and that, like killing and so forth.
So, talking about killing and so forth, can we even say that when the Chaitanya is great enough to achieve its purpose to condition the death of another, that is what is referred to as killing? Can we say this, that it
just different degrees of dhatu, like jetana?
Just different degrees, but it has to be of a degree that it actually is a support factor.
It can reach that degree.
A support factor for the other's karma to bring its result.
Does the person know about the other's result, or?
No, it doesn't, but all we know is about
that. He just
that
has
intention
to kill.
But we know that it's not completed karmapata unless the death actually occurs. So that is his intention, and that intention has to be fulfilled in that way. But the karmapata is just referring to the strength of the chetana. Talking about karmapata, which we know can be through body, speech or mind, and you've said before that if it is through the mind and there's no action through body or speech, then it's not karmapata. But what about the kinds of karmapata that are mentioned, like particular kinds of wrong view or covetousness in the mind only?
Can that person condition miracle?
Condition?
Miracle. To destroy everything.
To destroy
all lives. in the world.
I understand the connection.
That is through minder.
That's through minder, yeah. I see. If they can,
right.
If they can have that effect.
Yeah.
If they can cause destruction just through their mind, the power of, through the psychic mind, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about covetousness? It's mentioned as one of the karma patterns through the mind, covetousness, when you really
sometimes
desire the other's
it depends
positions.
On the meaning of that word. For example, if there's still the clinging to the idea of self, it's a kind of covetous.
Yes. But would that be karma patterns if it's
it depends on the deeds which will lead to that action.
It has to lead to deeds and not just the idea in itself. Mm-hmm.
And it can be like just the example of miracle.
I see. Example of miracle.
Because they're clinging. Mm-hmm. So there can be such intention to kill because of the clinging to the idea of self.
But if it's just clinging to the idea of self and intention to kill, but no killing, then it's not kamapata yet.
Yeah.
I have a question. As I understand, we're trying to make the point that kamapata is intention.
Complete.
Associated with complete course of action, but still it comes down to the citta and intention in particular, the strength of intention at that time. As you were saying, it's just dhatu, it's just elements. So a question arises, for example, then in the case of someone who, because a person whether he will die from the action also depends on his karma and also maybe his health, difference in health between two persons. Let's say someone has the intention to kill, but that person is very healthy and strong, so he doesn't die. As against someone else, or maybe that same person, if he was sick, he could easily die of the. But the intention, let's say, is the same, and the action taken is the same, killing.
I still think in terms of citta, cittasika, and rupa, there's no one there, if there's no thinking about it.
But we're saying if the person doesn't die, the citta is.
But what about citta at that moment? One's own citta, not the, of the other citta. Of the other person, just one's own citta at that very moment, nothing to do with the other.
Strong intention to kill.
Yeah, it's one's own strong intention to kill.
But the person doesn't die.
It doesn't matter, because who can know the other's citta?
So.
And the story of that citta, of that person.
So, if I have the intention to kill, I carry the deed out.
Mm-hmm.
But the person doesn't die, is
it
that killing?
Do we have to call it killing or anything? And just what about that reality which has intention to kill?
I think that what Sukin's point is that we can say that all that matters is the present citta, the present intention, which in both cases is the same strong intention to kill or harm. And it doesn't matter what happens after that, because it's the intention that matters. But it just happens that in one case there is a death and the other case there isn't. So in one case the intention will lead to result because it's kamapata, and in the
because
other
you
it won't.
See that That's we it. Usually think in terms of story, concept. That's all. It's only thinking about that.
But at the same time,
so we keep on thinking again and again, over and over about that, not the understanding of citta right at that moment.
Yes, but at the same time, when we're trying to make the point about what constitutes kamapata and what does not, it's also a story.
It depends on that person's citta only. Do you want to find out? about what happened after that?
No.
So just leave it. To me, I think that the best thing is to understand reality at that moment.
This is not about intention killing, but intention stealing. I still remember one Vinaya story. One monk was carrying some very precious thing, and then he had momentarily, just one moment, he had an idea of stealing it. That's it there, and he told the story to the Buddha, and the Buddha said it's stealing. So he was expelled from the community, Sangha.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, just one thought. But that was stealing.
Did he steal? No.
He just had an idea.
Idea of stealing, but stealing. The Buddha said it's not stealing.
So, who were left?
You mean who didn't have an idea?
Yeah.
The rules are tougher for monks.
Yeah, maybe it's a different definition.
I'd like to go back to the previous question about paryatya. Can we say that the principle of the more the better applied to paryatya or not?
It depends on what we mean by paryatya.
Mm. No, I meant sort of studying, physical studying. Reading.
With understanding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Skillfully.
Not concerning understanding, but just studying.
Study so without good. Understanding?
Yeah. No,
that is not very yanti at
okay.
all.
Okay.
So, how do we know what is pariyatti from what is just studying?
Okay, what is tattooed now?
Seeing is tattooed, visible objects is tattooed, thinking is tattooed, reality is tattooed.
How many tattoos are there?
One at a time.
Is that pariyatti? Or never forget that even now is tattooed. Yeah, even intellectually.
Then what's the significance of so-called studying a lot?
Okay, scholar in Pali. Scholar in Vinaya, scholar in Sutta, and scholar in Abhidhamma. As how many jitas are there? And jitasikas and so forth. But what is here and now?
So you are saying that the practice is the most important thing. Right understanding is the most important part.
Just for understanding.
I mean, that's a good example. Scholar in Pariyatti, in Suttanta, Vinaya, Abhidhamma. It's about Dhamma now. Whether Suttanta, Vinaya, Abhidhamma, the point is always the Dhamma now. So it's the Dhamma now.
So there may not be any academic type of study.
Mm-hmm.
We are just discussing Dhamma now. There could be pariyatti right now, but no actual, what we think of as study. So there's no necessary connection between the two, actually. It can be pariyatti without book study and book study without understanding. So.
When it says in the commentary that Chulapantaka, little Wayman, became an arahat with the Patisambhidas, and it also says he became a Tipitaka Dara, a bearer of the Tipitaka, knowing, meaning that he knows all the Tipitaka, what exactly is meant here by becoming a Tipitaka Dara, knowing all the Tipitaka?
Okay, just one word. She knew Dhamma covers everything.
He knew, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
because there was no Tipitaka at that time, so it means that he just understood that
realities.
All realities are dhatus. Yeah. It doesn't mean that he had any scholarly knowledge of
because
the text.
Because no matter who talk about anything, she could understand because she knew all about realities. Mm-hmm. Like Tantu.
Yes. So, for example, people in Burma talk about being a
scholar.
Abhidhamma Dhara or a Sutta Dhara or Tipitaka Dhara because they have memorized the text. Actually, the real meaning of being a Tipitaka Dhara or an Abhidhamma Dhara means just understanding.
Skillful in reciting.
Skillful in reciting.
It's amazing skill.
So back to Chula Pantaka, he couldn't be skillful in reciting.
So long time ago, and we really couldn't know about his citta at all.
Yes, but it just means really he understood about all realities.
Just a general question on Pariyatti, because it's something that comes up in our discussions, that when there is understanding at an intellectual level, or direct understanding for that matter, does it mean that the previous accumulated understanding has been conditioned to arise?
Certainly.
Yes. And so you could say, it's hypothetical, but if there's no previous accumulated understanding, then it would be very difficult to develop understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
For example, for now, is there Sammatiti as the Eightfold Path, one of the Eightfold Paths? See? Without right understanding right now, there will never be Sammatiti of the Eightfold Path. But people expect that there would be very, very special Sammatiti just then. See? Impossible. And they can recite name of the Eightfold Path? No understanding about now.
Perhaps they think that having the intention to have awareness is one of the conditions for the arising of awareness.
Can it be?
They think it can.
Mm-hmm.
But people find it hard to accept that awareness or understanding can just arise of its own accord without effort. Without conventional effort.
Without understanding is better than without effort.
Without
understanding.
Yeah.
It's more correct than without effort.
So, you mean that whenever someone says that there should be effort, then better draw their attention to that there should be understanding?
At moment of having understanding, is there no effort at all?
There has to be.
So that's the right effort. No need for other effort.
And also, I think one thing to make a point about Pariyatti, I mean, we're talking about reading a lot, right?
Reading with understanding.
With understanding. And also, I think at some point, when understanding is developed, we come to see that each word has to be understood. So it's not about many words, but each word.
Mm-hmm. It's like without the understanding of that word, how can there be understanding of other words?
Yes. We talk about how it is understanding, and we know that virya arises with the understanding, so we don't have to be concerned about. In the commentary to Satipatthana, when it talks about atapi, it talks about what burns the defilements of the three planes of becoming is ardha. Atapi is a name for energy, and then it talks about all the factors of the Eightfold Path, so it has to be with the right understanding. But it says that atapa is referring to virya by way of instigating the associated things. So only here virya is referred to as atapi, and then it talks about the samapadana. So we know it is with right understanding. But I was interested in atapi or virya as burning the defilements, this meaning, because usually we talk about just right understanding as eradicating the defilements.
Without right understanding, can you do that?
No, so it has to be a right understanding, that's clear. And this meaning of atapi or virya as burning, before we've talked about the meaning of jhana as burning, so can you say a little more about the difference?
Can we say that all kusala burns?
All kusala burns, okay. So all eightfold factors burn the moment they arise. Any reason in particular it talks about virya as burning rather than the other factors?
It includes
the others.
So what's the meaning of burning exactly?
Can you get rid of it without burning? Get rid of it without burning?
Well, presumably it doesn't mean quite the same as eradicate.
It's not. Then what is it?
Until it's eradicated completely.
Maybe sets it on fire. Takes time to burn.
And wait or burn.
I think a lot of people have the idea that if once awareness has been developed, then the defilements are being whittled away gradually, and the more awareness there is, then the less and less there will be lobha and dosa. But the accumulations of lobha and dosa, as far as I understand in the theory, don't actually get eradicated until enlightenment. So there can be strong lobha dosa moha even after awareness and insight have been developed.
So what is burnt?
Good question. What is burnt?
No, I'm just picturing in my mind that actually maybe eradication doesn't mean that everything is still up there to the brim,
yeah, yeah,
and then suddenly goes. There must be a slowly less and less.
Yeah.
Right?
What about lobha with titti only? It's gradually, but little by little,
yes,
at moment of understanding.
Right.
Stage by stage.
So what about the sutta which talks about burning with lobha, burning with when the world is on fire, burning with lobha whenever objects experience through the sense doors?
Can you distinguish fire?
Different kinds of fire.
Right.
Good fire and bad fires. Jonathan's point was that because of the strong accumulations, even when understanding develops, there can be conditions for strong attachment anytime, strong dosa, and unless one is a sotapanna, wrong view can arise. But actually at moments of understanding or any moments of kusala, the hiri and otapa are developing, the metta is developing, so there is actually a gradual change or a gradual development of kusala of all kinds, I think. And some people go on to say, well, when there is a development of understanding, there should be a change of character or there should be some improvement, but it all depends on the previous klesa, so we don't know what will arise.
Can you know who's sotapanna?
Well, one can tell from the views expressed who isn't, I think.
Just going back to the burning of defilements again with the development of awareness and insight, another issue that's come up for discussion is sila, which seems to be a strong view held by some people that a person who's developing awareness or insight must have good sila. Is that correct?
Okay, what kind?
What kind? Body, speech?
Yeah, only that. What about indriya, samvara, sila? And other sila. Not just that.
But I think your point is that the person who's developing understanding may not have very good sila, is that right?
That's what I don't think it necessarily follows, because a person may, for example, be in an occupation where is difficult to maintain good sila, so he can't immediately give up his occupation. And people have different accumulations, and some people, even if they're interested in developing awareness, they still want to swat mosquitoes and stuff like that, so there's no rule about it, as far as I know.
It depends on Panya.
In what way?
The person who doesn't kill, can they reach enlightenment? Mm-hmm.
Depending on Panya. And the person who does kill, again depending on Panya for either. We had a funny example about a sutta, or I don't know, it might have been from the Vinaya, but about a blind monk who stepped on insects, probably from the Vinaya, and people thought that he had killed deliberately, but it was pointed out he was blind and didn't know what he was doing, and there was no intention to harm. And one friend thought that the monk referred to must be an Aryan, and the point must have been related to Satipatthana rather than just an account of how we can't judge the other's actions and it's just our own cheetahs at that moment. We don't know anything about the monk.
As it said.
So it doesn't matter whether he's an Aryan or not an Aryan, it's just the fact that we can't tell by the action.
Can we?
Can we? No, we don't know. Yeah. Even he's not a blind monk, we can't tell at that moment. We know that there's Chaitanya now, there's Chaitanya at each moment, and the Chaitanya is karma. Now, you mentioned some examples before. When one animal kills another one, it's kaya karma through kaya dwara, bodily karma through body door.
Again.
Well, again, this was what you said, because it's not deliberated or it's...
Even so, who knows again?
Again, we don't know. It's just speculation about it. But when we say that it's kaya karma through kaya dwara, what is actually meant is that it is the intention which conditions bodily intimations and other rupas. And when it says that it's through the body door, does this mean that it is through the...
No plan to kill.
Does it mean that it is through the...
Sudden moment.
The sense door process, not through the mind?
No, we don't talk about the different doorways. We just talk about...
the bodily intimation. Yeah. So it just means that there's no previous planning. Mm-hmm. It's just the cheetahs at that moment in the mind door process that just condition the bodily intimations without prior planning. And when there is deliberate planning, then we say that it's manokarma through the kaya dwara. So again, it just means that there is many moments of thinking, many moments of planning, conditioning the
killing
bodily intimations which lead to the killing, such as if you lay a trap or go to more trouble. And then if someone orders someone else to lay a trap, then it would be the manokarma, because it's a lot
exactly
of planning, leading to kaya karma, leading to the bodily intimation.
It just is plan of its our plan.
Right. In this case with speech intimation. So it's no hard and fast rule, it just means generally with planning or without planning.
Just getting back to the earlier topic of pariyatti, we call it study, but with understanding. So it could be reflecting on the teachings, and particularly in relation to the present moment. But how is it known whether or not there's understanding?
You just want to understand the word or reality.
The relevance is that the moments with understanding are to be developed, and the moments without understanding are not to be developed. So presumably if there's no understanding, then it's akusala, like wanting to or have results.
Or akusala without understanding.
Could be akusala without understanding. You're nodding your head.
Yeah, I think it's a type of kusala, but yeah. Very lower level kusala.
For with understanding and for without understanding.
Okay. If we want to classify it, we don't have to, but it would be kusala of the level of sila, not of the level of...
At the moment of trying to name it, is yeah. It pariyati with understanding or without understanding?
Probably without understanding.
Just wanting to anyway. Call it... It doesn't matter at all what it's called.
No, it doesn't matter. But in discussions with others, if one is using the classification of dana, sila, samatha, and vipassana, and trying to explain the differences, then I suppose it could be samatha, kind of samatha.
Many different moments.
Just want to call it again. Whether it's called samatha or vipassana.
Moments of samatha, moments of understanding, sort of conventional things, yeah? Or moment of attaching to, or moment of attachment to what one is studying. Yeah, there are different moments. Joy.
Pleasant feeling.
Yeah.
Kusala,
but this is the attachment.
Right.
How many layers of attachment?
Yeah, we can't know.
Add it up and up on and on.
If it's pleasant, there'll be attachment. That's what it comes down to, right?
To be honest, when I was a monk, I enjoyed reading them because I always had a good feeling. And I somehow would like to have that feeling, but to be honest, it was attachment.
Can one know the difference between pleasant feeling with kusala and akusala?
Probably moment of some moment of kusala, but also moment of akusala.
Right.
Often you say to people the important thing is to listen more, hear more, consider more, discuss more, and we know that real listening is just the moments of understanding, but actually when we talk about listening more, hearing more, considering more, there's bound to be many moments of kusala and akusala, like coming here to a discussion, different moments, different cheetahs. So then we had a meeting the other day with friends at our hotel, so then other people will say, isn't this a method? Like they may have a method of going to a retreat or going and following their sitting practice. Well, what about coming here to listen to you or to open our Abhidharma books, because there are so many different cittas, kusala and akusala? Why is this not a method?
So what's meant by method?
When we say to someone who maybe sits and focuses on different dharmas arising, that this is following a method or following a technique, not any understanding, then their typical response is, when we come here listening, this is also a prescribed course of activity. But I think it just comes down to the dharmas and intention.
If we don't have time set for discussion, when will we have discussion?
Okay, this is from a sutta talking about akusala kama pata by body, speech, and mind only. And on the unskillful mental action by the mind only, not by any bodily or speech intimation, it says, and I've only got the English, how is one impure in three ways by mental action? There is a case where a certain person is covetous. He covets the belongings of others, thinking, oh, that what belongs to others would be mine. In other words, he would like the others. He bears ill will, corrupt in the resolve of his heart. May these beings be killed or cut apart or crushed or destroyed or may they not exist at all. And he has wrong view, seeing things as there's nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit or result of good or bad actions, no this world, no next world, no mother, no father, etc. These are the three ways by mental action. So these are the akusala kammapata, which doesn't condition speech or bodily intimation. So when you say that, well, maybe it's referring to miracle or it must later condition action, but in the text it just seems to be referring to particular kinds of wrong idea or very strong dosa, wishing someone was dead but not actually doing something, or the covetousness. Yeah. But
would no you action at all?
Here it doesn't mention any action at all.
Is it completed?
Well, it calls it akusala kammapata, so it refers to it as complete.
Not completed.
You're saying
or completed?
Completed. So it's completed.
It's done.
It's done. Well, according to the text, it refers to these as the...
What is done? What karma is done?
Well, earlier you were saying that what's important is the
it
very
can
strength
be prior
of the
planning.
Prior planning. What about in the case of the wrong views, where it says nothing good, nothing bad, blah, 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 the strong wrong view, but seems to be no...
It can condition wrong speech and
later.
Wrong deeds, yeah.
So here when it talks about akusala kammapata, that is not speech and not action. Well, it calls it kammapata, but you're saying that it will condition the other kinds of action later. So you're saying it's not actually done, not actually completed.
In reality, too.
In reality,
not just my words.
Yeah. So if there's no actual action, physical or speech, mm-hmm. then it's not done. It's, mm-hmm.
But it's not just normal akusala. Mm. Stronger than that.
So this is much yeah. stronger than that, meaning that it's bound to yeah. condition action mm-hmm. later. But we can't say it is kammapata, it's complete.
Well, it's not complete. We not cannot say it's complete.
No. So the same would be with regard to kusala kammapata. So, for example, if it is right understanding, that doesn't condition any speech or action.
Does it need speech and action?
Okay, so you're saying that wrong view needs speech and action, but right view doesn't need speech and action. Is that correct?
Because it's kusala.
Obviously, akusala citta is kusala kammapata, but it doesn't have any deed. Mm-hmm. So akusala must have deed or
strong.
Speech, but kusala doesn't need speech or deed.
It depends, like dana.
Must have yeah. a deed. Yeah. So just right understanding doesn't need a deed.
Getting back to the subject of pariyatti and which moments are with understanding or kusala or not kusala, it still seems to me it would be useful to know the kusala moments from the akusala moments.
From? Thinking or considering or realizing?
Well, it would be useful to know by direct experience without just trying to deduce, well, this is thinking about Dhamma, so it must be kusala, for example, but there's no clear distinction.
Because it's not panya at that level.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing you can do about it. One sees that with people who, for example, have wrong practice, that they also think that they're developing kusala. Everyone has the idea that more kusala is better. So obviously everyone who follows the Dhamma thinks that they are developing more kusala, yet some are and some aren't.
Just before Sarah mentioned about Dhamma, Dana, then I have a question. What is the most important function giving, because dana is strongly emphasized in Buddhism.
Why can't one give?
Right?
Why cannot one give?
Why?
Why can't one give more than we do?
Or just give. Why can't one give?
There is a cultural factor too, but also it's very sort of self-oriented, you know. So we have that tendency of one is very important than others.
We do not
think so much of others. Mm. So giving is probably one of basic way of seeing others as equal as myself.
For whom? Further question.
Yeah, for myself. The reason why I ask this question is giving is very difficult to do. Because
one should understand what is giving in reality, just give.
No. Usually we give. No. In my case, I often give others, but it's almost like I give you, but please treat me well. You know, we have that feeling.
Is that giving?
No, it's not giving. But it's a very low level giving, but it's not really pure giving. But we often do that kind of giving.
So it's not giving.
Different moments.
The motive is for me, not for you.
May come before, in between or after, and but not all the way through.
But what is there deeply rooted?
Deeply rooted, there is attachment because it's not been eradicated.
And many people give for return, expecting for return. Like, treat me well.
Yeah.
It's part of Japanese.
As a Buddhist, one know that we have to give without any self-motivation, yeah? But the actual giving is often self-motivated, you know? It's very hard to read.
So it's said in Dipitaka that for Buddha, Bodhisattva, and then Savaka, they give without wanting anything in return, just for the other's sake.
But it's a pure giving, and it's very hard to do, is what I'd like to say. Like people here, they give something to other people, especially to monks, before they buy lottery, yeah? So it's
from giving?
Yeah, it's a very small amount of ksalama.
Or buy the birds to release and wish for heaven.
Yeah, the point is that giving is regarded as the sort of the lowest level of being sala, than the sila bhavana. But still, giving is very hard to do. Mm-hmm. Pure giving is very hard to do because we are so self-centered.
So that what we think in terms of sila is also for self. Mm-hmm. Right? Are we not killing because we don't want to go to hell, we want to go to heaven?
Nothing to do with understanding reality, or it can condition moment of developing understanding too, because akusala citta hinders panya to see or to understand reality right now. So if one has more and more attachment and aversion and avicca, no condition for understanding reality. That's why Bodhisattva knew all about the parami. What are the parami in order to become enlightened? All goodness.
But don't we usually say the only real hindrance to understanding is ignorance and wrong view?
And akusala too.
Or akusala. Yeah.
I I do not quite understand the notion or concept of bodhisattva in the Theravada Buddhism. Can we say that everybody who is practicing Dhamma is a bodhisattva?
Would you like to know the truth? You are bodhisattva, but not Mahabodhi, not Buddha, but only Savaka disciples.
Okay, okay. In other words, we are obliged, as a bodhisattva, we are obliged to perform as much, as many, we shall do our best to perform 10 paramis.
Just for having less and less avicca and all akusalas.
So we know that right understanding takes time to develop. We know how much glaciers are there, and it's a long way to go. So when there's right understanding and knowing what it is, it's in a way also accepting that there has to be a lot of development, and that's like the attitude of bodhisattva.
And those who'd like to understand reality right now knows the benefit of kusala too. The disadvantages of akusala, the danger of akusala. Otherwise, why wanting to realize it?
Do you think of yourself as a bodhisattva?
No, I don't.
We don't have to say. At moment of wanting to understand, developing understanding.
Those moments, right.
So it's important to hear and consider about all kinds of kusala, about dana, about metta.
Now, in a sense, we are bodhisattva because we know that developing kusala, developing panya takes countless lives, long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because of seeing the danger of avicca, all akusalas come from avicca, see? So the opposite is vicca. Vicca cannot bring about the akusala at all. Hiri and ottappa of akusala. No one.
A friend asked us to ask you a question about breath. Now, when we're talking about breath as an object of satipatthana, we know that it's a very subtle object that only those with particular accumulations can know. And the friend knows that it is just the rupa conditioned by citta, and that it's not anything to do with the passage of air or the rupas not conditioned by citta that we have some knowledge of during the day, but he would like to know what the characteristic of the breath, which is the object of satipatthana, is.
Can he know because he'd like to know?
He cannot know just because from lobha, no. Mm-hmm. So just wanting to know cannot, but when we discuss the characteristic of vedana, or we discuss the characteristic of hardness, or the characteristic of seeing now, we know there has to be some hearing or some considering. So he says that whenever we just say, oh, what you think is breath, it's not breath, and because it's not the subtle one conditioned by citta, he would like to know a little more detail.
Okay. Where's breath? Where? Know it. Impossible.
Impossible to know. Mm-hmm.
Even one knows where it is.
At the nose tip, or
one knows in theory it's the subtle rupa conditioned by citta, the nose tip, but still impossible to know. So then it means nothing that can be said about it, is that right?
Yes, because you see that what is there is called breath, and it's breath conditioned by citta.
Yes.
And that's all we can see. We can't see.
Until it's there.
Until it's there.
Yeah.
And I think that also shows the difference between pariyati and just knowing a description.
Yeah.
You know, people are just seeking out to hear about an explanation. Whereas, I mean, breath is never experience. I mean, the object of experience. Just because he hears about it in the Tipitaka, he wants to find out an answer for it. But that's not pariyati. Just to want to hear what is breath. Whereas realities are rising and falling. What's the reality that's now? That's part of your life now.
Well, it may be a kind of elimination, like in the beginning people think that they understand and aware of seeing an visible object, and then they hear more details and they realize that what they thought was seeing or what they thought was visible object is just thinking about a concept of visible object, because they thought that seeing colors was visible object, and then they realize, well, actually no, that's not visible object. So maybe it's the same with breath. He perhaps thinks that perhaps there is awareness of it, so he wants to hear more so that he knows for sure that it isn't awareness of breath. Because if we just say it doesn't appear and nothing is known because it's a subtle one, then he still has doubts, he still wonders whether in fact perhaps he knows
but
it.
But even with something like visible object, it's not like, for example, we're often reminded that thinking is not awareness.
Yes.
So even thinking about visible object is not understanding visible object.
Yes.
I think that's what needs to be pointed at.
And why breath?
Well, the answer is always because it's mentioned so
just
often.
Then.
That's
just then?
Yeah.
So it's a self?
Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't appear now.
Well, I think just to put a bit of context to this discussion, because often people think they know what breath is, and they've read the sort of...
So no doubt about it when they know.
Well, if they know, but...
if there is doubt, it means that they don't know.
If we say that's not breath, and they say, well, what is breath?
Breath is unknown now. Because it can be known by sati. With right understanding, the reality of it.
What would be a condition for there to be awareness of breath?
No selection, anatta-ness. And why breath? Because you see that the visible object is appearing. Why not visible object? Why breath? See? Even it's appearing. Why not visible object? See? That is attachment to it, to breath.
This same friend who is in America also has questions about understanding Paramatta Dharmas such as Kusala and Akusala and relating this to a kind of knowledge of conventional activities. So he thinks that there must be a link, like we see how someone behaves, like if someone is in a job where they're killing animals or something like this, that there must be a connection between understanding of Paramatta Dharmas and what we describe conventionally. Is that the point? And when we say, well, in the end, well, actually there's no killing, or never mind what the conventional actions are, there can be an understanding of Paramatta Dharmas. But his question is there a link, like we say, okay, if there's development of understanding, then one wouldn't work in a hospital that's performing abortions or this or that. So people would like to have a link between conventional actions and understanding. Can one say there's any link?
Right understanding, the intellectual right understanding, links the understanding of reality right now.
that's all one can say.
Mm-hmm. And then I think there are less conditions to think in terms of long stories about situations and trying to work out whether this is good or bad, and because one has more and more confidence that it all comes down to the realities now, that's all there is.
Someone else suggested that when we hear stories as in the Dhammapada and the Jataka, for example, the story about the crow flying over fire and burning to death, and that it's helpful to get a conventional idea about karma and results, even though there's no understanding about paramita dhammas. Can you say something?
Yes, but that can be the understanding of the cause and effect, the cause and result.
But what if it's still understood with the idea of self?
Cause
yeah,
is,
I mean,
no self.
In terms of the karma of the crow.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but the cause means no one there, only the cause.
Only cause. Mm-hmm. So it still comes to dhammas, because
right.
cause is a dhamma,
right.
result is a dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I suggested when he said death, that consciousness mm-hmm. is vipaka chitta. That's what must be considered. But something of cause and effect, just abstractly, without referring to dhammas, without talking in terms of nama.
That's why we need
nama.
Studying reality as it is.
So let's say someone who has never heard about
no understanding
dhamma.
Of reality.
No
at
number,
all.
Yeah. So no use or useful.
It depends on whether he'd like to understand better.
He's
about
not
what
interested
is meant
about
by karma,
yeah,
see,
he's not,
and result.
He's happy with the story of karma.
Yeah, it's easy to say cause and effect.
Yeah.
Like to be born is a cause, but before death, what are the result of causes now? Coming back to reality right now.
So, yeah, very few are actually interested
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
dhamma. But yeah. they like the story, of course. And
only
effect.
The story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that story is useful or not?
For understanding cause and effect.
Yeah.
Only.
And what? But you were just saying cause and effect is
they
dhamma.
They don't understand. For example, let's talk about effect right now, because we don't know the cause of the effect right now. What are the effects right now? See, they don't know.
Mm.
So it's just the word cause and effect.
And sometimes it's not just don't know, it's also mistaking cause and effect.
And don't want to know too.
And don't want to know.
And there's no, it's some vague understanding of
mm-hmm.
cause and effect, but no understanding
right.
anatta, no understanding
mm.
of
realities.
This was another question from the American friend. It does not make sense to me to say you can be a Buddhist simply by understanding dharmas without any regard to whether you're killing beings or not, drinking, engaging in wrong livelihood, wrong speech and action in everyday life. Maybe this issue could be raised with Khunsu Chin. So he thinks that if you just talk about understanding dharmas but you're not referring to how someone is living in terms of their livelihood or their sila.
So, what is the actual Buddhist?
It has to be moments of understanding, because
mm-hmm.
there's no Buddhist at all.
Yeah,
so
without understanding, it's not Buddhist.
Yes. But he would like to say that
depending on level of understanding.
Okay, so depending on level of understanding, how one will behave.
I don't know why people almost like they want to believe or assume that understanding Dhamma means disregarding Sila.
Yeah.
I mean, understanding Sila is Dhamma, Akusla is Dhamma, all Kusla is a Dhamma. So understanding Dhamma means understanding the value of Kusala and the harm of a Kusala.
It's like when anyone is Buddhist, that person will not kill, not do any wrong deeds at all. But actually it's not like that.
Because the understanding hasn't been developed sufficiently.
So many people would be afraid not to be Buddhist at all.
I think even as a Buddhist, there are different levels of understanding. And once understanding and understanding then becomes very strong, then eventually the person may forsake his livelihood, you know, as a doctor or as a whatever.
Why would you do that?
Because, say, if one's understanding is very low and couldn't see the danger of killing and doing other bad deeds, then one have to maintain one's life. And eventually one would become aware of the fact that continuing is not good for oneself. Then eventually because of his development and understanding, then he thinks that developing understanding of living a much wholesome life is far more important than just maintaining one's life, you know, livelihood.
Mm. I thought you said he would give up his livelihood, like being a doctor or something.
Yeah, well, he may, because...
Why is that unwholesome?
No. The doctor is performing abortion. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Or a vet, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He wouldn't have to give up being a doctor, though, would he? He could just change to...
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to ask something about the birth?
Well, earlier I just heard Ajahn say, when we were talking about karma, that birth is cause. So I wanted...
Birth consciousness? Or what? Birth consciousness is vipaka.
Yes,
result. Right,
okay.
And what else? A result?
Death.
And what else?
Seeing.
So, just back on killing and karma. So this was a comment you made that I questioned at the time. The intervention of the person with murderous intent is a supporting condition for the latter karma to ripen rather than the former, so that a normal lifespan is not reached. So just to clarify, I don't think we can say that someone else's murderous intent is a support condition for one's own karma to ripen. For example, if you have a murderous intent towards an animal, that intent is not a condition, because that intent will just bring its own result for the animal that is killed. That death just is a result of karma. But the hardness that's experienced, for example, when the body consciousness experiences hardness of the bullet or whatever it is, that hardness is a condition, but one can't say, I don't think, that the other's intent is a support condition at all. Is that correct?
Only karma is hardly known. What about the other factors? Harder than just karma.
So what you're saying is, it's hard enough to know karma, don't bother with other factors. Yeah. So we know there are other factors.
And what's the use? For example, one was born like this life.
Mm-hmm.
From what? See?
Past karma.
What?
Which karma? We don't know.
Yeah. What's a part again? Factors,
right.
And so forth.
Right. So we can just say many support factors and...
One has to know one's own panya, level of panya, how much one can understand reality.
The only reason it's of any importance at all is because usually people have the wrong idea that another's intention or deed is the cause of the death, rather than karma. So if one says, well, actually karma is the cause of death, then they will say, okay, well, karma is one factor, but the others, intention and deeds, is another important factor. So then it becomes a bit of a grey area if one says, well, maybe a support factor.
And this is quite different from moment of understanding Dhamma as it is. No one there, see.
Yeah.
No idea about the others.
Or killing. Or yeah. Body.
Yeah. So the intervention.
Okay, the intervention of
is a supporting factor for one karma to ripen rather than another karma to ripen. In these cases, karma that's ripening.
Right.
But we've all performed so many different kinds of karma in the past. So there's karma that will support early death and karma that will support long life being committed in the past. And as to which of those two ripen in a given lifetime depends on other supporting factors.
And by intervention, you're not referring to intention.
No.
Just...
Yeah, the fact that happened.
Yeah, that happened.
We can't really say anything about it, or we can say it was time for karma to bring its result.
That's right.
Well, maybe John's point is just to show that one karma arose when otherwise another karma would have...
Right. Maybe right. Just,
yeah.
Supervening
event.
Yeah.
I see could be something like scaffolding.
Something like what?
You say scaffolding.
Yeah, scaffolding of building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It supports our life. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right. It's really the same kind of thing, like about the various good deeds may be support conditions, so one karma doesn't bring a result or another does. It's the same. In Samoha Vinodini, it talks about for karma to bring its result, other conditions such as the place one lives, the time, like wartime. But again, these are just conventional descriptions because the place, the time, but actually it's just moments of bodily experience, moments of seeing, moments of hearing, different vipaka cittas arising. But I think that by pointing to place one lives and time, it's just suggesting various support conditions.
Because who's the speaker and who's the listener?
Mm. The one that can understand about dhatus now.
Yeah.
An understanding of the dhatus now and how at death there are also various dhatus and various conditions. Then one's just thinking in terms of places and times and weather, and then it's quite useless.
So it's like the test for one's accumulation to understand it or not.
Like then it goes on, one may be born as a slave, was an ugly person, a handsome person, upadi, payoga, failure or success of means, having performed many evil deeds or many good deeds, these have an influence on the ripening of karma to produce vipaka. That's your point. But again, it's like even when one's talking about being born as a slave or as an ugly person, one's talking about just kusala, nakusala, vipaka, and different rupas conditioned by karma and different pleasant and unpleasant feelings, because otherwise it's quite meaningless.
Yeah. And just, we don't have to talk about other karmas. What conditioned me and what conditioned you?
Right.
See, can anyone tell?
Yeah.
All karmas, each one can be conditioned.
A minute ago you talked about karma and you said it's not the understanding of dhammas in the present moment. Is it correct that we can say that is all what matters? Understanding dhammas.
What can be known?
What can be known? Only the present moment can be known. A lot of people find that too sort of narrow an approach, and they find it difficult
but
to accept.
Can it be known? Can it be known?
Only the present moment can be known directly.
So, Does one know?
One doesn't know.
Even when it can be known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep on getting away from it.
So it's wrong view that takes us away from it and wants to find other things to do.
Not Samma Sankappa of the Eightfold Path.
Right.
To do and think about it. Very few people are interested in the present moment. Mm. Just the suggestion that there's only one moment to do. They'd rather hear about other things.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Even one word like kamma, they don't know kamma now, see?
They might agree that only the present moment can be known and should be known, but then they might say that it's too difficult unless you do some special kind of...
Can it become easier?
I think that by hearing the teachings and considering and...
So why wait?
Yeah.
Keep on going away from it.
Mm.
And what will bring the Sammasankappa back to this moment?
Understanding reality now.
From not knowing at all to just know little by little. It's good enough.
Learning the kalesa,
those hands. I think that's the thing, that knowing a little, even a little, of correct understanding is worth, is so valuable. Perhaps people don't appreciate the value of just a little bit of understanding.
I think it's actually seeing the differences in seeing the danger of ignorance and not seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
No hiri and otapa for not knowing or understanding it.
I think being slow is better than taking a wrong path.
Right.
Bringing it back to this moment, like here it talked about karma leading to being born as a slave or as an ugly person, and like you said, like you or me now, so just like moments of seeing, misseeing, sees something different from what you're seeing, sees moments of bodily experience, just different vipaka, cheetahs experiencing different objects, conditions.
Because there must be thinking, follow seeing,
yes,
and hearing.
Yes.
And that is very important,
mm-hmm,
because it's vitaka, cetasika.
Yes. But when it's referring to the slave or the ugly person conditioned by karma, then it's just referring to the vipaka, cheetahs, not to the kinds of thinking on account.
Arising from this moment, mm-hmm, later.
So whatever we read, whether we read about the place one lives, the time, the slave, the ugly person, actually it's just about seeing now,
mm-hmm,
bodily experience now.
And thinking about.
Thinking about time or mm-hmm where one lives. It's just different kind of ideas that one has, because actually there's no time that one lives or place at all. It's just different moments of thinking.
Getting back to your comment now that slow is better than wrong understanding, I suppose you could also say that no understanding is better than wrong understanding.
Okay.
Slow.
So nothing is worse than wrong understanding.
Right, that's a better way of putting it, yeah.
Like you always say, better not to have heard the teachings and to understand them wrongly. And
in Anguttara Nikaya, there is one sutta. It said that the worst thing in this world is wrong understanding. Yeah.
The wrong path.
Yeah. Vichagita.
Are we now on the path?
On and off.
On and off. And no we to be on the path at all.
And the path to what?
The path to the eradication of defilements.
That's good. That's the right path.
If it's not that path, then we don't want to be on it.
Eradication of defilements, beginning with Duongyu. When we talk about eradication of defilements, I think you said earlier that it's Duongyu that is whittled away by a development of awareness.
Can one know what one is now? On what level?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So it's Panya. So it's Panya. Which knows?
Much better to know there's a lot of ignorance, because if one doesn't know there's a lot of ignorance, then there's not much hope for it. So understanding how there's more and more ignorance is a kind of understanding.
So one can see the value of Panya, it knows readily.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. What Sarah just answered, are we on the path to eradication of defilements? And then John suggested that the first is wrong understanding. I'm wondering whether in our case, because when we sometimes, when people talk about that there should be no lopa dosa, and sort of they think that we should be without lopa and dosa, and instead of knowing that it's about understanding, gradual development of understanding. So in a way, what John is suggesting also points to the fact that the it's not about eradication of defilements, all defilements. For our stage, it's more towards better understanding. Hence, this means that wrong view, eradication of wrong view more than anything else.
That's why we don't mind, because when there are conditions for lopa to arise, right understanding can understand right then. It's just a reality. Otherwise, there's no way to eradicate wrong view at all.
I think everybody would like to have a result, but the result are out of the combat. I mean, that would like to eradicate our attachment and
so
aversion.
But, you know, we could say that if given a choice between eradication of, I mean, you know, good results or good karma or better understanding, we choose better understanding. Right?